Welcome to Psych Gumbo, Tulane's mental health radio show for the Tulane community and the New Orleans community. I'm Dr. Holly Peek, a Tulane psychiatry intern.
And I'm Dr. Mordecai Potash, a Tulane psychiatry attending and a psychiatrist at Tulane Counseling and Psychological Services.
So what we wanted to talk today about is all about drugs. And we'll start the broadcast talking about a story which I'm sure many of you in the Tulane and New Orleans community have heard about, is about the big drug bust we had here on Tulane's campus at the Kappa Sigma Fraternity House.
Yes, I'm sure lots of Tulane students were surprised to learn what Brown can do for them, what your local UPS delivery driver is bringing to your local Broadway Tulane Fraternity House.
Yes, so apparently one of the young men who lived in the house had ordered over through the mail some ecstasy or MDMA or mollies, as many people call them. And this was not your average UPS worker who delivered the drugs. It was a federal agent.
Right. It was they somehow got alerted to the purchase of a large quantity of the MDMA, and they had an undercover agent pose as the deliverer of the package, and afterwards they executed a search warrant and found very, very large quantities of several different controlled substances in the possession of two Tulane students.
And, I mean, this was not your average amount of drugs that you would have. I mean, this was a lot of drugs the guys had. And we're reading NOLA.com article and an article in the Hullabaloo about the amount of drugs they had. They had, one guy had in his room 21.6 grams of marijuana, 68 grams of mushrooms, 46 doses of LSD, 0.91 grams of something called DMT, which we'll explain what that is later, 47 grams of opium, 107 grams of MDMA. There's also cocaine and a lot of drug paraphernalia there.
Right,
it's a
right.
lot of stuff.
Absolutely, Holly. And to give people a sense of perspective, as far as the opium's concerned, of course, that, when refined and further processed, is used as a pain medicine ingredient in several different types of pain medicine for chronic pain. And the amount of opium that they had delivered was far greater than what your average cancer patient would need in a year's supply of their pain medicine. So this was obviously distribution levels of the illicit substances, even those that do have, in other forms, medicinal properties.
And so this just kind of brought to our attention hallucinogens in general. And we just want to kind of start off the program talking about the history of hallucinogens. A lot of these drugs that we talked about are within that category. And this kind of stuff's been around for centuries.
Absolutely, absolutely. What people don't realize, and early on, at a certain point in our residency training, when we were studying about drug abuse, I looked into, well, what's the history of the abuse of these hallucinogens? And it turns out, as long as we've had human civilization, we have had substances that cultures, that people and cultures have used together for intense shared experiences, often causing distortions or hallucinations to bring about a sense of cohesiveness and a shared intense experience that further bonds the group together, whether it is hallucinogenic mushrooms, toadstools, substances secreted by animals or vegetable substances. These in countless cultures have been used in intense situations such as coming of age ceremonies, where it's often used to welcome new people into adulthood, in different religious ceremonies, or before or after intense periods such as warfare or combat, which is still sometimes how it's used in modern society. So basically the message is, the history of hallucinogens is as old as the history of society. This is not a new issue.
And it's interesting because also here at Tulane today in 2013, people are using these hallucinogens as part of socialization. We were speaking to Aaron Armelli earlier. He's a psychologist here at the Tulane CAPS Center. And he was telling me that, you know, a lot of people explain that they use these things because it's Tulane, and that's kind of like the underground culture of partying here, or using these different substances.
Right, absolutely. That a lot of people do feel that part of the accepted social scene at Tulane does involve and expect casual mixing of alcohol, marijuana, prescription drugs, and other illicit drugs. And indeed, it's so common and pervasive that people often feel left out if they're trying to find a social scene or a wide social group that doesn't involve using alcohol or recreational drug use, at least occasionally. So there's very much this culture of acceptance and permissiveness about this drug use. And let me just say right here that Holly and my job, it's not our job to say drugs are bad and you shouldn't do them. That's, you know, you have other people to do that. However, what we want to talk about is educating the conversation so you can have a better understanding of the reasons why people use drugs in general, the positive benefits of some drugs in particular, as well as the drawbacks and sometimes persistent negative effects of particular drugs.
So if you're going to do it, know what you're doing. And that's what our job here is today, to talk about it. And we're going to kind of go through some of the drugs that were found at the Kappa Sig house. And we'll start off with MDMA, or ecstasy, or what a lot of people refer to as mollies. So the effects of MDMA, a lot of people use it, like we're talking about earlier, for a part of social cohesiveness. It gives people a sense of increased energy, euphoria. They feel close to other people. It sends like the surge of serotonin and dopamine and norepinephrine, all these different neurotransmitters in your brain, just surging in your brain that brings out endorphins, and people feel great when they take it.
Absolutely. And that was why MDMA was first synthesized in the 1950s. It was first synthesized in California by researchers at the University of California, who are particularly looking for new neuroactive chemicals, perhaps new types of antidepressants. And they came across MDMA. And when they found out that it didn't work as well as an antidepressant, they actually found that it brought about intense emotional experiences, intense emotional closeness. And in the 1950s, psychiatrists would use it in psychoanalysis, give it to patients in psychoanalysis, as well as using it in family therapy and group therapy. And one psychoanalyst said that one dose of MDMA was worth 3 months of psychoanalysis. Interestingly enough, MDMA is now being explored through the National Institutes of Health to be used in terminally ill cancer patients as a way for them to take it, to have a sense of emotional intimacy and help bring about closure with their families during the dying process. Often when patients are dying with cancer, they feel not only emotionally overwhelmed, but racked with pain, nausea, and other distressing physical symptoms. And there's studies ongoing looking at the effects of MDMA in helping patients deal with these symptoms, as well as helping them bring emotional closure and closeness to their families, being able to resolve some old conflicts before they die.
you know, and that's those are the good ways in which MDMA is being researched and can be used perhaps in a positive sense. But of course, that's now not how it's being used here on the Tulane campus.
Right.
And like part of the negative parts of it is when you have like this big surge of like serotonin when you take the MDMA, it depletes your body's natural serotonin. And so when you come down off the MDMA, people often find themselves depressed and anxious and looking for their next dose so they can feel that closeness again. And now it's debatable in a lot of the research that I read whether MDMA is addictive. However, MDMA is associated with other forms of substance abuse. There was a survey we were reading about with 1,200 college students, and it found that 9% of the people had used ecstasy at some point in their life. And compared to the people who only used marijuana, the people who used ecstasy were far, far more likely to also use LSD and heroin, inhalants, and marijuana. So there's this big polysubstance abuse problem with MDMA.
Absolutely, Holly. And the one additional important point about MDMA, as opposed to opium and marijuana, which are organics, MDMA is totally synthetic. It is synthesized in a person's laboratory. And often when you get it on college campuses, what you're told is ecstasy is not actually the chemical MDMA. It's some related compound that has some similar characteristics, but can have other intense side effects that MDMA would not. Particularly cardiovascular and neurological side effects. And there's been several alerts over the years from bad batches of ecstasy and even young people having catastrophic cardiac or neurological side effects because what they took and were told was ecstasy was actually not MDMA.
Next, let's talk a little bit about marijuana. A lot of people use marijuana to kind of self-medicate themselves. They might be feeling anxiety, and marijuana helps ease that for them.
Absolutely, absolutely. And medical marijuana is also in the news. There seems to be this growing social acceptance of marijuana. But what isn't as well appreciated is that for people who use it to cope with anxiety, after using it in a habitual way, they begin experiencing anxiety whenever they're not using marijuana. They begin to have rebound anxiety or withdrawal anxiety.
So it just becomes this cycle of anxiety that can be caused during marijuana abuse.
Right. So what you started to use to treat the anxiety, well, now you have to continue to take it because if you're without marijuana, you have more intense anxiety.
Something else they found in the Kappa Sig house was mushrooms, which is another hallucinogen. A big problem with mushrooms is oftentimes it is misidentified. Just because you're eating a mushroom doesn't mean it's like the type of mushroom that people use to get these highs. A lot of different mushrooms have very toxic side effects, and people don't always know what they're taking.
Absolutely. Particularly the way that they're used, they're often dehydrated and concentrated, which makes it very difficult to identify. Plus, when the mushrooms are dried and concentrated, when people take them, they're getting a much more concentrated dose of the hallucinogen. So what may have been safe at a lower dose could now be toxic to their system, to their electrolyte system, causing dehydration or confusion or exhaustion at its concentrated dose.
And then finally, we'll talk about DMT. That was something that was mentioned in the article that I actually had to look up what it was. And it looks like this is kind of a new sort of drug. It's a naturally occurring substance in humans and in many plants. But now it's one of these synthetically formed drugs that we're seeing on the market.
Right. They're coming fast and furious, particularly from Europe, a growing market for synthetic drugs, both synthetic hallucinogens and stimulants. And the message here is buyer beware, because those new synthetic drugs can have unknown or unpredictable side effects, which I'm sure we'll talk about more in the future.
There's always plenty to talk about with these synthetic drugs. And finally, cocaine and LSD is something they found in the house. And, you know, cocaine and LSD has been around for so long. We've heard so much about it. But what a lot of people may not know are the persistent and enduring biological effects that people experience after taking LSD.
Right, because people feel familiar, you know, they feel when they hear LSD and cocaine, they're like, is that the 1970s show? You know, because it's been around for such a long time. But what they don't appreciate is that there are waves or different epidemics of drug use, and that just because a drug has been around for a long time doesn't mitigate or reduce its neurological damage or cardiac damage. A lot of people who are enrolled in the veterans health system continue to complain of persistent hallucinations, because they took LSD when they were younger, often in the military. And there are a number of people that abuse cocaine, perhaps even infrequently, that now have some permanent cardiac toxicity or heart damage from a distant use of cocaine in the past.
So just because you're familiar with the name and you feel like it's been around forever, people have done it forever, doesn't mean it doesn't have these persistent
right
effects.
That's the history of drug use. Bringing this back to the beginning, the history of drug use, shared drug use, has been around as long as groups of people have been around. And just because a illicit drug has been around for a long time doesn't make it safer.
All right, well, that's about all the time we have today on Psych Gumbo. Thank you so much for joining us. We'll be back next month for another mental health topic. Be sure to visit our website at www.psychgumbo.com. We're always looking for questions, comments. We'll talk about anything you want to talk about on the air.